I love the Flintstones, but the Flintstones is like eating a hamburger that's full of like PCP, where it's like, oh, I love the hamburger. I don't remember the hamburger.
Where's that hamburger from? Rock Donald's.
Welcome to the Dad Movie Club podcast, the only podcast on the internet featuring two dads talking about movies from the 90s. And now here are your hosts, Sean Bowers and Wes Needham.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dad Movie Club. I am dad number one, Sean Bowers.
Dad number two, Wes Needham.
And boy, are we going to have some fun today. Not like last episode where we were watching a nice, not serious movie, but a more adult film. This time we went full kid 90s, children of the 90s. We watched the hit live action film, The Flintstones.
I'm glad you said for kids, because that's a question I'm going to bring up during the course of this podcast.
Well, there's a lot to unpack or unrock, as they might say, in the Flintstones, because they'll throw the word rock into any phrase.
Everything.
But before we get to the movie, Wes, I realized, you know, last episode this is a dad movie club. Yeah. We're both dads, but we really talked about our children in the abstract, and mostly as things that we just keep us from having fun and enjoying movies.
Simply a plot device for the movie club.
But how's Maisie doing?
Maisie's great. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's she been up to the last few weeks?
Well, she says she's saying fuck a lot.
Okay. Is that real?
Yeah. Because of me.
Oh, no.
Like today, we were looking out the window and we have a neighbor dog that never stops barking. And I just said, as I always say, I wish that dog would shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
To which she said, shut the fuck up, like 16 times in a row.
Oh, no.
So I'm reaching that age where she's two now and fully capable of repeating everything and knowing the context for which it's being said.
But maybe that's not a bad thing, though, because you could just, it's like how in Europe they give six-year-olds wine or whatever. Like, you get them used to the vice early, and then they don't abuse it.
Well, I don't seem to care when she cusses. It's not bothering me yet. Now I'm sure I'll get the call from daycare and everybody goes, that'll change everything. But even then, I don't think I'm capable of caring.
Well, that's society's problem. That's sure. Not your problem. Yeah. You got to bring the rest of them up too.
She's got a good head on her shoulders. She'll be fine.
Yeah.
How's your little Benjamin boy?
He's doing good. I'm worried a little bit about that same thing. Not that he's, I mean, Benjamin, for those who do not know my son, is 6 months old. He has just learned to crawl-ish. And he's kind of pulling himself around and stuff. But I worry about corrupting him already at this young of age, because he's been pulling himself towards my iPad a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Even when it's not on. My iPad, my Apple Pencil, and my PlayStation 4 controller. And I think it's because he sees Daddy holding those, and he thinks those are an extension of Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also been, I just started playing the new Far Cry video game.
I don't know it.
Well, it's about you're in Montana, and you're trying to kill a cult leader and all of his crazy religious cult members.
Yeah.
And also you like stab animals in the face and stuff like that.
So he's seeing all that.
We wake up every morning and while mommy sleeps and daddy's on duty, he sits in my lap and I kill cultists. And I'm just, I think to him it's all colors right now. Beautiful reds. And
we'll see, won't we?
But I'm just, you know, he's, I don't know, if I walk in one day and he's like,
dissecting a squirrel in the backyard.
Yeah. I'm like, what am I going to do? I mean, luckily we don't have a backyard, so
yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Or any more squirrels since the last dissection.
Yeah. He's killed once and he'll kill again. But yeah, other than that, he's really good.
Good kid.
He's a good guy. I like looking at him and hanging out with him. And he did not watch this week's selection with me.
No, nor did mine.
I mean, the only time as dads that we can really free up this time is after bedtime.
Yeah, it's completely alone.
We got to just completely, well, you said Hannah watched it with
you.
Yeah,
my wife did join me for this viewing and liked it and remembered loving it when it was first out, which is a lot to unpack there.
Well, so it came out May 27, 1994. Mm-hmm. So our first selection was early 90s. Now we're kind of like mid-90s. We're starting to get into that real 90s flavor here. And it was that thing that I love about the 90s, which, and the thing I remembered most about the movie from when I was a kid, because I definitely saw this in theaters. Mm-hmm. I definitely loved it.
I did not see this in theaters.
I had the McDonald's. They had the big McDonald's promotion. Yeah. I had the McDonald's toys. But it just the 90s, like, dedication to set building mm-hmm. was the thing that I took away, and like props and stuff. Like, I liked, I think this was like one of the earliest ones I could remember being really like production designed. And of course I wasn't thinking about it being production designed, but I was like, oh, this is cool and it's real. And like, I could probably go to a Universal Studios attraction that yes. looked like this.
The impressive thing that comes out of this, let me start by saying, like, I can't wait to not watch this movie again. Sure. I didn't hate it.
Okay.
I said, oh, brother, a lot, and it'll yeah. come up throughout this podcast, because every note that I took starts with, oh, brother.
Yeah.
But what I was impressed with was the shot-for-shot buy-in to the original universe of the Flintstones, and they really did just take out animated people and put real people yeah. in the exact same, like, John Goodman's jumping up and freezing in the air throughout yeah. the movie going yabba-dabba-doo, the actual opening to the TV show being the actual opening to the movie.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to be artsy with it. They weren't trying to find an angle to bring it to an audience of today. It was a complete recreation of the cartoon, shot for shot, live action with human beings.
Which, like, if you're gonna do That's the fine. Flintstones, like, I don't need adaptation with these things. When I see a property I like, there's time for adaptation and bringing it up. But like, I know I talk about Garfield a lot, but I think about the movie Garfield, where they made him look like a real, kind of real-ish cat. And they yeah. made Odie just a regular dog
yeah.
That's not yellow and doesn't do anything, have big ears and fall off tables and stuff. I'm like, mm-hmm. you change the core essence of what it is by trying to, like, ground it to something. And I don't need anything grounded. I just need...
And no Breckenmeyer in this movie, which helped.
Well, he was probably, what, like 12 at this point?
What kind of John... Anyway, we're getting into Garfield.
Now, oh, yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, I'm sure you have some Garfield fans listening to the pod right now.
No, I can't imagine.
Your work. Yeah.
They're all in class.
If you guys
right
are
now.
Listening, shoot a tweet to our page that we haven't created yet.
Yeah, yeah. Oops. It's probably something like Dad Movie Club.
Dad Movie Club. You'll
or
see it.
Dad Movie Club 420, something 420, like that.
69, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, complete recreation. They just said, you know what? We're just going to create it shot for shot. And for that reason, I think every single person in this movie deserved an Oscar.
Wow.
I do.
That's a bold.
It sucked. I just liked the movie. But they all bought in, except for Halle Berry, who...
This was early Halle Berry, though. I mean, this was before Halle Berry had really defined who Halle Berry was screen, right? Yeah. I mean, she'd done that sitcom probably by this point. She was just a
pretty girl temptress in this role.
Yeah.
But there was one thing I wanted to say, because you were talking about the year and the time and the context. This was the 3-year period where Hollywood said, we're out of ideas. What were the movies that we watched as kids? Because that happens every few years in Hollywood, where these producers who are greenlighting movies are greenlighting it based off what they watched when they were kids.
Sure.
Out of that, within a 2 to 3 year period around this movie, what you get is this. Then you've got The Addams Family.
Another beloved film.
And then going a different direction, but in a more successful direction, The Fugitive.
Yeah.
And then Maverick. All within a year or two of this movie coming out. So it was just the double down on what these guys were watching as kids.
The Brady Bunch movie was around 96 or 97, which I'm hoping we get to eventually, yep. because that was a beloved film of mine as
a kid.
I'll
go back and do that.
This one kind of was that same thing too, which is like that temptation to take an old property and that's sort of ludicrous and just go full comedy with it. I mean,
but Brady Family takes that aspect and puts it in today's world, right. which was a fun little True. Thing. Whereas these guys, it was just like everybody's going to look exactly the same and do exactly the same thing.
Yeah. But I mean, seeing him hover in the air because his little twinkle thing got interrupted by somebody or whatever, and then be lowered back down by a team of wire people. Very clearly, I was like, I'm okay with that. Even John Goodman's commitment at the very beginning when he's in the car and he's doing the footwork and they mm-hmm. cut to it or whatever, but they cut back to his face and he like peels out or something and he has to just sort of like lean back and like yeah. go with it.
Yeah.
Trying to like do the big cartoon face, even the cartoon walk, like when they're walking into the house at the end of the movie. And he has to come back out and like drop Dino out on the porch and stuff. Yes. He's like, it's very stilted and it's clearly trying to recreate that. I bet they just like watched
John Goodman watched the hell out of the original and did every movement and facial thing that the original Fred Flintstone did.
Which he is like, I mean, he looks, why they had to make it at like when they did, because they were like, we have an opportunity here. We have the star.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Steven Spielberg, who like produced
Steven
it or whatever.
Spielrock.
Oh, excuse me. Steven Spielrock.
The movie starts in the credits with an introduction of executive producer Steven Spielrock.
The only first brother who got like Flintstone
rocked.
Eyes.
He
like
got
they
rocked.
Do a lot of.
We'll say they got rocked.
Okay. Like Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
They got rocked.
He got rocked. Yeah. If you get punched by him, you got rocked. But they didn't do that with the other credits. They only gave that value to.
God, you can just see them in the room just going, this will be fun. Yeah. Won't this be fun? Steven's like, haha, I'm on board.
It sets the tone. I mean, he was the one like obsessed with pushing this movie forward for the longest time. He didn't direct it.
No,
but
I didn't know this.
He like, he was the one, because he had worked with John Goodman or whatever on, was it Always or mm-hmm. something before?
Yes.
And was like, one day, man, you're going to play Fred Flintstone for me. And it was like, what? But he like kept following up. And the only reason that I think this got produced was because John Goodman came aboard and like finally agreed to do it.
Interesting. Well, look, when he came on, the one thing we can say is he really did buy in. You've already said it, and I wrote down that everybody, including him, really bought into it.
Yeah.
And they're all going for it in this very impressive, fucked up way.
Yeah.
Like even Rosie O'Donnell, she is going full Betty. And
yeah.
They are sticking.
She did the
to
laugh. She did the.
The laugh, yeah. The movements, the facial expressions,
yeah.
All of it. Like every single actor, I was impressed.
But comedy is about reaction shots. And this movie, they don't do anything but reaction shots. Even when they have dialogue, they're doing reaction mm-hmm. shots. So mm-hmm. like how
cartoony.
So clearly they're the best actors.
Yeah.
Because they're giving us what we do. They're the best comedians. Not even the best actors. The best comedians in the world
mm-hmm.
were the cast of the Flintstones live action 1994 film.
So you're saying John Goodman, Rick Moranis, Rosie O'Donnell.
Uh-huh. And who else?
What is her name?
Who else?
What
Who's
is her name?
It's Elizabeth Perkins.
Elizabeth Perkins of Big.
Was she in Big?
She's the lady in Big that touches the 13-year-old boy.
Oh, boy.
That's two podcasts in a row.
Back in the 90s, it was enough to just describe them as the lady in title mm-hmm. of movie, because there was one lady
yes.
in every movie.
Every single movie.
Yeah.
I was Elizabeth Perkins, who also fully committed and in and ready to have some fun.
Miracle on 34th Street. That's the one I always think of when I think of her.
Yeah. Her and Dylan McDermott. Not Dermot Mulroney.
Yes, correct. Yes. Dylan McDermott. I was trying to think. This is an aside, but there was a movie on TV the other day, Runaway Jury.
Love it. Love that movie. John Cusack.
But yeah. Dylan McDermott is in the opening scene and plays like an office person or something who gets killed in an office shooting.
Oh.
And there's a lot of Dutch angles and a lot of drama. Not even 90s editing, because this was like early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, oh, Dylan had really fallen at this point from being like a lead and like the owner of the practice,
yeah,
to guy who gets killed in the opening scene,
yeah,
as he was about to go to his son's baseball game. Speaking of dads,
great,
so
good,
that's something to look forward
to.
So for all
you
us.
Dads out there heading to your baseball game for your kid right now,
going to your baseball game, going to a son's baseball game never works out in movies.
No, nope.
It didn't work out in Hook.
Hook.
I don't think it worked out in Liar Liar.
Nope.
If that scene exists in Liar Liar,
probably not. But let's say it does.
And even this movie, speaking of, you know, fatherhood and parentage and stuff. Mm-hmm. I forgot that this movie kind of dealt with some of those things because, well, we haven't even talked about the plot of the movie.
Yeah,
but,
let's do that.
But early on, this was
What's
even
the,
before
what is the plot of this movie.
I don't know,
we'll
but this was
that.
Before the plot even starts. Is we witness the adoption of Bam Bam.
Bam Bam, who I hate in this movie.
Bam Bam's not a great.
I fucking
kid.
Hate this kid.
Just as from an acting standpoint, the kids are not great in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true of a lot
good.
Of
Don't put
films.
Kids in movies. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They could have put like mannequins in there with
rather.
Moving mouths or puppets.
Stop putting kids in movies.
Yeah.
Leave them alone. It's
Hashtag
them
stop putting kids in movies.
Yes.
Except for Abigail Breslin, you know?
No.
Let's give her another
no,
shot.
No, even then. She has a lifetime of being fucked up now.
I don't know. Some of them have come out. Jodie Foster came out okay. Anna Paquin.
Ask Jodie Foster.
Who?
Ask
Natalie
Anna
Portman.
Ask them if they think it was okay.
Oh, boy.
I bet you get some shit.
Oh boy.
Well, I really took it to the side. But yes, the plot.
The adoption happens, and that's confusing because I don't remember, was he adopted in the original?
I don't know. All I know is when they were like, this kid comes in their house in the first 10 seconds with the long hair, the little Bam Bam,
yeah,
and starts fucking shit up.
Oh, they do a cleanup montage.
All I think about is when they're like, oh, I hope we get him. And I'm like, I could not, if they brought this kid in front of me in an adoption scenario, I'd be relieved to see this kid screw shit up so I could be like, good, I can move to the next kid.
That's such a horrible thing to say. This was back in the prehistoric time when there was like one kid for every, clearly they stole him from a caveman tribe, a less intelligent caveman tribe. Yeah. And gave him to an affluent family like the Rubbles.
The Rubbles.
Yeah.
Rick Moranis. Great Barney Rubble.
And this was like...
his last movie, right?
Was it his last movie?
I was trying to think of what he's done since.
I was going
to
say, because this was almost like a hidden role for him. Like, it's not one that people go back... because everybody's like, oh, Rick Moranis was a genius. And then, oh, Rick Moranis retired. And like, kind of a smart move on his part because it's made him more beloved, I think, than ever.
Yeah.
By virtue of the fact that he's just around somewhere and won't do more movies.
Just left.
For
parenting, literally to be a parent.
Yeah.
Hashtag dad movie club.
Because he's not that old, is he?
No.
He's like...
Now, 60s? He's probably 60 to 65.
Yeah.
Google it if you're listening.
I wonder... that's
comment
that,
if
that's such
wrong.
An interesting thing because... what's he living on? The residuals?
He made some money and he did some residuals. And I think what it was his wife died and he decided to become a full-time parent is the kind of
thing. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Rick Moranis
was the guy who had the perspective to know when to get out.
And you know
say,
what?
This is better.
Let's induct Rick Moranis
into
the
dad
movie
club.
He's
Rick.
Our first honorary dad. And by that, I mean, not that you are an honorary dad because you're a dad, Rick.
He's a physical dad,
but
literal dad.
You deserve to be in the Dad Movie Club Hall of Dads.
Yes, HOD.
Yeah, the DMC HOD.
Yeah, yes.
Did we get that right? Yeah,
probably.
I'll check that back later and can dub in the correct letters if I got any of that wrong. But
no, don't.
Anyway, congratulations, Rick. We'll be sending you your prize, which is one DVD copy of You Don't Mess with the Zohan. I have 7 copies of the DVD sitting next to us
staring at them as we speak. They look good, Rick.
Just waiting to get sent to dads.
Rick,
across,
I think you're really going to like this movie.
Across the country. He's a hairdresser, Rick, but he's also the character from SNL that won Sabra Price is Right. So if you liked both of those two things.
We've talked about this movie now longer than we've talked about the Flintstones.
Well, because what happened, you know, I love the Flintstones, but the Flintstones is like eating a hamburger that's full of like PCP, where it's like, oh, I love the hamburger, I don't remember the hamburger.
Where's that hamburger from? Rock Donald's.
Yeah.
Our second time where they've squeezed
They
Rock.
Had to get that in there because they had the big promo happening in restaurant. That's where he goes instead of the drive-in. He goes to a Rock Donald's drive-in, first of all, which is just wrong. That didn't exist.
And in the wide shot where he pulls into the parking lot, I was looking for the feet. No feet.
No feet? Did you see wheels?
Without feet. Wheels were moving, no feet.
Oh, boy.
It was quite disappointing.
Yeah.
I thought they'd really buy it. None of the cars were doing the feet.
Have you let IMDb's Goofs page know about this
yet? Not
yet,
but I will.
That's a
biggie.
That's an offense. So the actual plot of the movie, though.
Yes.
They work at the quarry, Fred and Barney, and their boss, Kyle MacLachlan.
Oh, yeah.
From
Let's talk
Twin
about that.
Peaks, and his assistant, Halle Berry, are like, we need to get a rube, and we need to promote a rube, and then pin our embezzlement, I think, on the rube.
Yes.
And so they hold it. They have a test, like an aptitude test.
To see who deserves this great promotion.
Yeah, and it's Fred. Mm-hmm. And Fred gets it, and it splits him and Barney apart. Fred,
but no, let's not cut the headline out, which is Rick Moranis, Barney, takes the test, aces it, switches the test with Fred, so that Fred has the better test score.
Yeah.
And by switching it, thus, Barney gets the worst test score of the entire staff.
Yeah. Well, Fred's a goon. Mm-hmm. Fred sucks.
Fred does kind of suck in this movie.
And he becomes a pompous blowhard.
Like within 10 seconds.
Yeah. And it's kind of a cautionary tale of that wealth, can't always bring happiness, and will and Fred has to fire all the quarry people because they're going to automate the quarry.
Even before he has to fire everybody, this is literally what happens in a Flintstones movie. They have the setup. They get the rube. Rick Moranis pays back his buddy, his pal Fred Flintstone, by switching the tests. As a result of switching the tests, Fred Flintstone gets a promotion, and then his very first act in his new job is firing Barney Rubble for having the worst test score on staff, which was Fred's test score.
Yeah.
That's Shakespeare.
What, I didn't expect you to go to
that Shakespeare
in terms of your Rockspear. Now I understand.
If you
it.
Will,
I was so in the zone of the Flint zone that I didn't realize what was happening.
By this part of the movie, I was pretty drunk.
Is that Shakespeare though? I mean, it seems like that would go for a movie that's for kids.
Yeah,
that seems like that's going to go over a lot of kids. Even the word embezzlement.
Mm.
Or anything with corporate intrigue, even at a prehistoric level, who's that for? That's not for.
It's like your Pixar's. You know, they got to give something to the parents.
But this was mostly for parents, right? Because it's preying on their nostalgia.
No kid in 1994 was begging for a Flintstones movie. No kid knew what that was.
Right.
When we did, I knew Flintstones. Was like, did you watch?
You watched the cartoon? Yeah, I watched. I mean, I think I'd like rented the VHS tapes from the library.
Yeah.
Or like when they'd play it with the Jetsons or something.
When
like
it was
that.
On TV on whatever channel, yeah, I would watch it.
Which
early
is also,
Cartoon Network would show a lot of Flintstones.
Yeah, it's also weird that was like. I mean, you talk about the executives going back to the things that were popular when, like, they were young and pulling them back or whatever. But, like, I can't think of how kids would be exposed to the Flintstones nowadays.
Just TV when you wake up at 7 a.m. and it's on whatever channel it is you turn on.
Is it even – do they still run it? Because it seems like it would be too
– Today, no.
Like, the way that they – I was trying to think of, like, when I was a kid, not Pinky and the Brain, but the – who's the time-traveling dog and his assistant –
they did the
movie out of them recently too, but it was an animated film.
Yeah, I don't remember the people,
but like that era, like Rocky and Bullwinkle, that era of animation was kind of just on the way out.
Yep.
When I was a kid, and like the Flintstones, I guess, was maybe like generation two
of
that.
Flintstones was like 60s.
Yeah.
And it was I think a primetime cartoon. It would come on at like 7 or 8 o'clock.
It was the Simpsons of its time.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes. With a laugh track.
Yeah. Which I like when cartoons have laugh tracks. I'm not going to lie about that.
Something
about it feels better because it's like, you know, the laugh track is fake.
Yeah.
So it might as well be in a cartoon as opposed to in a live action sitcom.
Yes.
I find laugh tracks comfortable in general. I wouldn't have minded a laugh track in this movie. So I could have known better when to laugh and
no more laugh tracks
when
for me.
Not to, or when to go, oh, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So we got Fred, who's got the position. He fires his best friend like the first day.
Yeah.
And then he's got to start firing everybody else, and he's the rube that takes the thing for all of it.
Yeah.
And already, Fred's in full dickhead mode. Like, he should not be given any kind of promotion. It's quick how quickly the hero of the movie is the bad guy in this
movie.
Well,
he kind of gets turned by Kyle MacLachlan, right? Because, like, Kyle MacLachlan and Hallie are both using him and, like, making him sign stuff.
Hallie's showing,
like,
the boobs. And
Kyle's the one who's like, oh, you've got to fire whoever. It's not like Fred's sitting in an office going, like, oh, you know what I should do? Fire everybody.
True.
He did give in pretty easy. He tries to make the case in that. There's that board meeting, right, where he's pitching up some alternative solution to his big boss, Mr. What do we think? Mr. Cliff? Mr. Rock?
Mr. Corey?
It's something rubble based. Well, not rubble, because. Oh, boy. Anyway.
I didn't take the note.
Me neither. But he looked like the Six Flags man.
Yes, he did.
And I liked that.
With
about
the stone
him.
Glasses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But he like pitches up some alternative solutions. They just don't go forward. I don't know. The plot, and I think. Rightfully so, just doesn't matter because it's all just in service of getting a lot of cool gags.
It was literally an excuse to make a Flintstones movie.
You know, doing some going shopping,
doing
and
the twinkle toes thing. Yeah,
the twitch.
But he's
with
got
the B-52s.
They're in there a lot.
Yeah,
more than a B-52 should be in anything.
It was nice seeing Fred Schneider, just happy.
Rock Schneider.
Okay.
Probably credited as much.
Yeah.
But out of nowhere, we're watching this. We're trying to figure out why that's so important for this guy to have this promotion. And then who shows up? But Elizabeth Taylor is in movie.
It was her last movie.
Was it? Yeah. I wondered. I figured it might have been. Holy crap.
Yeah.
What made Elizabeth Taylor sign the dotted line and say, I want to be part of the Flintstones experience?
I was reading about this. She donated her entire like salary from this movie to whatever charity she was known for when she was alive, or that might still exist or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think she did it as like primarily a charity gig.
That's nice.
But they were like, there was some story about when she like first came to set and they like greeted her with like 30 bouquets of flowers and like her perfume in a rock bottle that they use in the movie then too, and like all this swanky stuff. I was like, they really rolled the red carpet out for her.
She's Hollywood royalty, and she's playing the mother-in-law in a Flintstones movie.
There was that great scene near the end when Fred is thinking about, he's supposed to be concocting a plan, and a thought bubble comes out of his head. And instead of thinking of the plan, he's picturing Elizabeth Taylor in the mouth of a dinosaur.
Yeah, that was great.
And I was like, that, they had to shoot that.
Yeah.
And they had to tell Elizabeth Taylor, here's the gag. You're in a thought bubble eaten by an animatronic dinosaur mouth. So just go for it.
This is crazy Elizabeth Taylor time, too, where her best friend is Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
She's on TV just selling diamonds as part of commercials.
Yeah.
And she's done, for all accounts and purposes, from acting, and literally comes out of a proposed retirement to do this Flintstones movie.
She does a great job.
She commits 1,000%. Yeah. She's not self-aware. She's not holding back and being above it all. It's like, she went for it. I just couldn't believe, when she shows up, I go, you're telling me Elizabeth Taylor's in this movie. I was very impressed.
Now that I think about it, we shouldn't give individual Oscars to this cast. We should give them a SAG Best Ensemble Award, you know?
Yeah, I think that's okay.
Wouldn't that be something?
Until Fred says, I'm no Albert Einstein.
I liked that.
Oh, God.
I think I took one note, and I think that was the note, because I was like, hey, now we're on to something here.
They really do put the rock in every, a rock type thing in every single line.
Well, I was trying to think. So there, yeah, Steven Spielberg, Albert Einstein, not to mention Rock Donalds. There was the children's park called Jurassic Park, which was a funny gag.
Very good gag for Steven Spielberg,
There was the fact that Halle Berry's character is named Sharon Stone.
Yeah, and they don't care.
They don't.
Wait, I did write that down.
There's not a pun. There's nothing. It's just a reference. It's just an acknowledgement.
If you look at my note, I just put Sharon Stone, ! !
And then you put Halle Berry, ?
Just to make sure. Couldn't they just do something with that? But yeah, I was blown away by that. I think you'll appreciate this more than anybody on earth.
Sure.
Did you notice when somebody busts into Kyle MacLachlan's office, he's looking at like a nudie magazine, but it's a Stone nudie. Yep. Did you get a look at what he, like, the work the prop guy had to do? Like,
it was all great. So much work went into this movie. All the props everywhere. I mean, they do a lot of interior locations, I think probably because they built Bedrock, or they built downtown Bedrock, and it was like 10% of the budget of the entire movie or something to build it. But yeah, all the production work on it is just like insane. And I imagine it's all like styrofoam.
Yeah.
And just like well painted or whatever. But the fact that it's like practically lit and it exists there and it's not CGI, I would love to see, just as an experiment, for them to do that with a modern movie, and like not even like try to bolster it with CGI where they'll like put, you know, they'll fix the background or something, but the foreground is live action or something, or physically built.
Yeah.
Just like lean into it all the way, and you would get the coolest looking movie out of it nowadays.
I feel like if it was made nowadays, it would have been directed by what's his name? Tim Burton or something would do some kooky kind of.
See, I don't want to see Tim. I want to see a working horse director, like whoever this guy. I forget what he's a no name.
I couldn't find anything about him.
He had one successful thing that got him to this, which I'm trying to. Oh, it was Beethoven. He did Beethoven.
Oh, did he?
And then
which
Beethoven
was huge.
Yeah, so it was like, okay, we'll give you another tentpole-ish picture. I think the best comp to nowadays would be the guy that is doing the new Rock movie, Rampage.
Yeah.
who also did like Journey to the Center of the Earth 3D. Brad Peyton, maybe is his name.
I don't know this person. But these are the guys that they go, we know that they're a functionary director who can take on a big thing
like
this.
Like a mainstream. Adam Shankman was that for a long time. Mm-hmm. The guy that everybody hit, Brett Ratner, was kind of that for a long time.
Kind of.
Where they have no real voice of their own, but they can facilitate generally fun four quadrant pictures.
Which is hard. It's hard to direct a big movie. The things you have to kind of prepare your day for around CGI and staring at tennis balls and everything else.
No real tennis balls in this one except for Dino and the saber-tooth tiger, which only appears in the
beginning credits and end credits.
Yeah, which because it was like, this was before they were doing like full CGI characters. Mm-hmm. I think they, again, from what I read, I was doing a lot of research about this movie.
I'm impressed.
I dove down the rabbit hole, but it was like they had to animate the hairs individually because they didn't have the technology to like generate hairs dynamically yet. So that's like a weird.
That's why there's two scenes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How'd this movie do from a money perspective? Did it make some money?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It made...
I forgot if people liked it when it came out, too. There's a sequel, so it must have had some success.
I don't know that people liked it, but yeah, it made a couple hundred million around the world. And, like, they did the sequel, though, was weird because they did...
Viva Rock Vegas.
Right. It's the same director, but none of the... Like, the cast bailed.
Yeah, the entire cast bailed, but they still found a way to get this financially put out.
I think it was, like, close to direct-to-DVD, and then they maybe juked it at the last minute, or direct-to-video. This was back when, like, direct-to-video kind of thrived, though, and Disney was doing all the direct-to-video.
Yeah.
Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves.
Yeah, the second Lion King was direct-to-video.
Yeah.
They didn't care because they made money.
Right.
Because people want this shell case of the Disney whatever.
Well, and there was still like a narrow enough funnel that it felt like an important release to do something direct-to-video. Now, with like iTunes and stuff, you can release 20 movies a week and there's just too much. I mean, we talk about this all the time. There's too much of everything now.
Yep. Yep. Who was the Fred that took over in the second one?
Mark Addy
from the British guy.
Yeah. And then it was one of the Baldwin brothers was Barney.
Steven.
Was it Steven?
Yeah. Oh boy, they really took a hit the second.
It was Kristen Johnson from Third Rock from the
Sun. Third Rock from the Sun, yeah.
Was Wilma, yes. I think. Or Jane Krakowski. I can't remember if Jane Krakowski was Wilma or Betty.
Interesting. Probably Betty. God, who cares? We're not going to cover that stupid movie.
I think we should watch that next.
I would like to point out at this part of the podcast that McDonald's has come up twice now, and the B-52s make two appearances in the last 6 minutes of this movie. Two different appearances.
Do you count the end credit song as one of their appearances?
Yes, I certainly do.
Okay.
And then if I might also add that comic legend Jonathan Winters shows up out of the blue.
He
and
does.
Has a fun little scene.
Yeah.
Which I liked. And I don't know what he did after that. And he just died just recently, like within the last 5 years.
But he's been on his deathbed since this movie.
Well, yeah. And then finally,
they finally said,
went to the light.
We're not going to make a third one, Jonathan.
He tried.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think critics liked it at the time. I think America loved this movie or watched this movie and took their kids to see this movie. But this isn't one. I don't think this is one that like comes up a lot as like a beloved.
I don't think it should.
Classic of your childhood, even though it ages just fine because it's not tied to any specific time other than the prehistoric era.
While we keep calling this a kids movie,
yeah, family movie,
which I think we should decide if it is a family movie. I think it has to be.
Yeah,
but let's talk about the highlights that we've touched on and say them all at the same time now, which is Kyle MacLachlan comes up with an embezzlement plan to put a rube in place in his organization to fire staff for better profit so that he can, the bottom line.
Kids love it.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah.
Then Fred turns his back on his best friend and fires him after receiving the promotion. That was actually the promotion for his best friend who didn't get the job because he switched the things to be a good guy.
Great lesson for kids.
Then, after we find out that Fred Flintstone is the bad guy and that when he picks up on what's happening and decides to go the better path and become a good guy again, the bad guy embezzler, Kyle MacLachlan, steals his children.
Yeah.
This all happens.
Yeah.
His children are stolen in the Flintstones movie and held hostage
with
threat of pretty close to death as far as I could tell.
Why not? Kill the kids.
That was kind of hovering.
Yeah.
In the plot.
I mean, I'm going to spoil the movie for everyone watching it.
Well, we're at least a half hour in. I think you can.
He kidnaps the kids. They go to the quarry. There's a big climactic end scene at the quarry, and the kids are on a conveyor belt going through some Rube Goldberg-esque rock machine. They're going
to
get crushed like boulders. Yeah. Imminent death.
Which was great for Bam Bam, but I do feel bad for Fred's kid.
You shouldn't want any of these kids to die.
No, Bam Bam's got to die.
Oh, boy. But the point is they get out, they get free, whatever, and Fred and Barney turn the tables on him, something like that.
Yeah.
And in the end, Kyle MacLachlan's trying to get away, but as he's on the run, he gets like an avalanche from something up above. Mm-hmm. This goop comes down. And he's encased.
Yeah.
He's entombed.
Entombed.
He's dead.
Yes.
In the first cement.
Yes.
Or the first concrete.
First concrete.
Named after the quarry owner's daughter, Concretia. Which was a very funny joke.
That was a great bit.
A top of the notch joke. But that man's dead.
He's dead.
He's just gone.
And then put on display, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, because it's just a Kyle MacLachlan silhouette.
Yes.
Made out of concrete,
much like Harrison Ford when he gets put in whatever carbonite.
Yeah. Except he doesn't come back.
Yeah,
he's just dead.
Yeah,
he's a skeleton in there.
It's great. Well, like, look, it's okay because he just tried to kill two children.
Okay, so you're saying every time somebody tries to kill two children, we should kill them?
Now that's a debate that we need to have with our audience. They stand on capital punishment.
An eye for an eye, but children's eyes are smaller, so...
If he just killed Bam Bam, I'm fine. That's great. You know, in fact, elect him president. That's fine by me. But this other kid wasn't hurting anybody.
So you're going to vote for a child murderer for president?
I mean...
If we take one soundbite out of this episode, it's that Wes Needham will vote for child murderers for president.
If they kill Bam Bam. Yeah. Speaking of shitheads, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
Poor garbage disposal.
I loved him.
That was awful. Her. Like,
they have a dinosaur for a garbage disposal.
Oh, so awful. Poor thing.
And Fred puts his hand down his throat because he's a weathered
into his stomach.
Weathered old disposal dinosaur. And yeah, it crams his big fucking hand down his fucking throat. And I'll tell you what, I was so close to coming at that point.
Okay.
Good. But then when he's rich, they get a fresh dinosaur.
Yeah, which looked really nice.
They cart the other one out.
It's not, I just think it's like, I just felt bad for the dinosaur. But did you notice at the end credits, they say no dinosaurs were harmed during the making of this film?
They did two novelty cards before the actual credits.
What was the other one?
It was that and, this is not a good anecdote because I can't remember the other one. But they were like, we've got to like get these out of our system.
Give them what they want.
It was probably like filmed on location at like... in Holly Rock or something like that.
Full opening, full closing of the actual TV show.
And that nice meta thing where they go to the movies to see themselves.
Yeah.
Which I like.
That was okay.
I don't mind that.
That was okay.
On the cartoon, did they do that or was it like a Simpsons thing where they all run home and watch TV?
In the cartoon, they are doing the movie theater thing.
Oh, yeah, because they had...
They put the big ribs on the thing and it knocks the car over.
Which makes it a McRib now.
Did they capture that?
Probably not.
No.
I should write in or do some like fan scripting and see if I'll send in a writer's packet for the third movie.
Just do a spec script of the third movie. Yeah.
That is the talking of writer's packets. That's not actually so different from how they did this, that was the other big like factoid that came out of my research on this, which was that this was the movie that fucked over the Writers Guild. Their rules about how many writers could be credited on a single film.
Really?
They went through like 25 or 26 writers. No exaggeration.
They had
a couple of like pairs and then they would like throw out that script. And then they assembled a writer's room because they were like, this is a sitcom. We're writing a sitcom. Let's do it like we would write a sitcom.
Yeah.
And so there were like 8 writers working on that. And then they threw out that script, did another writer's room with like 6 more. And so, like, an early poster of the movie has, like, 12 names on it as writers.
Yeah.
And they decided, no, we can't. You can't do that. We have to, like, create a process now in which it becomes clear who the like maximum amount of writers are that can appear as credited on a poster or something.
Typically,
like that.
What they'll do is there's two head writers that get all the glory under, and then they run the writer's room or something.
Yeah, tinkerers on the backside or whatever. But
sure,
it was an interesting, just the notion that they approached it like a TV show. It explains a lot of the like the frequency of jokes and like the style of joke, which is very that kind of joke a minute sort of thing, that ratio. But it also explains why I think we don't remember the plot, because they. The eventual draft was a hodgepodge of
different ideas.
Who knows how many things that apparently Spielberg or somebody liked enough at some point to say, we got to do it.
I don't think I think it was, we're in month six and we've spent this much money invested in it. So we might as well put it out. So let's get, so with Flintstones, let me ask you this then. Is society better for this movie having been made? And
yes.
When people look back, is this a movie people do look back on lovingly and go, God, what a great time that for this movie to be made?
I think it will hold a place in people's memory. Once that memory fades, people will not care that this movie existed. Mm-hmm. But it's also a movie that exists better in memory because watching it this time, of course, it sort of falls apart. But in my head, I'm like, I love it. I picture a better version of it, I think, in my head.
Yeah.
It's kind of how I feel every time I go back and rewatch Wild Wild West, where I'm like, in my head.
I want to point out to our listeners, he goes back and rewatches multiple times.
In my head, Kenneth Branagh driving a steam-powered mechanical spider.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And then the movie itself is just doesn't quite live up to that. But is it, you know, I think it paved the way for a lot of incredible films to come. The Robert De Niro Rocky and Bullwinkle film and
but these movies did get made that you're talking the Addams Family we said earlier, like all this happened because of, I don't know if Addams Family was the one that actually paved the way or not.
It might
I think
have
that's
been.
Like 93 and then Addams Family Values came out either this year or the very next year.
So well, the big budget stylized, and those that's a very comparable piece because they're both heavily stylized and heavily adherent to their original source material while still being like kind of the time of the moment.
Tongue in cheek a little bit.
So of the movies we've watched thus far,
yes,
Joe versus the Volcano and the Flintstones, which is the top movie of the 90s for you currently?
Joe versus the Volcano holds on to that spot for me.
Okay, well I'm gonna
I'm so
bump
scared.
It
don't do
I'm
it
bumping it for the Flintstones.
You're seriously going to bump
this? Yes, the Flintstones is number one for me, and I dare another movie to come along and knock it out of the top spot.
Now I really do have a legitimate fear here, Sean. Yeah. I really do have a fear that the Flintstones is going to be the movie to beat for you for the next few podcasts, which is ridiculous.
We'll see.
Don't do this. You don't have to. There can be another way.
This is the only way that I want to live.
He's,
you know,
he's serious. Do you understand he's serious?
This is why we work so well together, because next up you're gonna pick like Hunt for Red October or something.
That's a fucking great
and I'm
movie.
Gonna be like, where's the dinosaurs?
Yep.
Why is Dino not in it? Still my number one movie of the 90s thus far that
I'm
we've
sorry,
watched
everybody
in Dad Movie Club. And again, congratulations to our honorary dad in our Hall of Dads,
Rick Moranis. Welcome, buddy.
Please email the podcast your address to claim your copy of You Don't Mess With the Zohan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's still available in stores.
We have plenty here, though. We do have plenty.
Seven
here.
Copies. Yeah. The most, six of which are sealed.
that's a fact.
Thanks so much for listening. Once again, I'm Sean Bowers.
I'm Wes Needham.
And we'll see you next time on the Dad Movie Club podcast.
Bye, everybody. Follow us on Twitter. Bye.
Hashtag Twitter.